Welcome everyone to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on countryjoeschickenshow.com and BBS Radio. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com, where we have had pet chickens featured, which is relevant to our first guest. And of course, you hear chuckling in the background. We have Country Joe himself.
Yes, I'm here. I can't wait to hear our new guest and what she's got. That sounds fun.
Yep. And just so any of our listeners, if Joe suddenly cuts out, he's down in Florida. And as sometimes happens in Florida, he's got thunder and lightning around him. So, you know, we'll hope everything goes fine. And we have with us Tracy Torres from MyPetChicken.com. Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show, Tracy.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I can't wait to hear about this. Let's start in. What's it all about?
How did you get involved in chickens in the first place, and then why'd you start a website?
That's a great question. I actually got started with a little classroom hatching experiment in the third grade. And I lived in suburbia and, you know, regular city blocks, and we all had small lots, and I don't think I'd set foot in a farm. and our baby chicks hatched, and I was enchanted by them, but of course couldn't keep them. So as soon as I became a grown-up, that was one of my first items on my to-do list was to get chickens of my own.
I
started researching it and realized how easy it was. And there really weren't any websites at the time that talked about that and held the hands of would-be or prospective chicken keepers. So I had the skills, and my husband had the skills to create such a website. So we thought we'd do it, and it would be a little hobby or a side project. And it's really become something much, much bigger to our amazement and delight.
Do you live in the city or that sort of thing, or in the country right now?
I grew up in a much more urban environment, but now I'm sort of, I guess you would consider it the exurbs, where we're a good long commute from New York City. People still do it from out here, but most people have 1 or 2 acres. There are lots of local farms. So it's a more kind of country environment.
Wow.
But when you started, you were in the city.
When I started, I had just over 1/4 acre, yes, and a teeny tiny lot and my 11 hens. And since we've moved, and, you know, of course, we aspire to one day really live in the country, but for now we're quite happy where we are.
Yes, when I was a child, I called that a sub-suburb. There's urban, there's suburb, and then there's sub-sub-sub.
Now, I think that's about right.
Now, what kind of chickens did you start out with, and are they the kind you have now?
Oh, boy. Well, chickens are addictive. You know, you start out with one of this and one of that, and soon you're building 2 and 3 coops, and you've got a lot more. So I followed that path. I started out with some Easter Eggers. I had some Wyandottes. I had a Leggers. Let me think. What else did I have back then? I had a Bard Rock. I had an Australorp and a Salmon Favreau. And now I have a little bit of everything. You'd honestly be bored. But my most exciting breeds at the moment are Cream Leg Bards, 2 Americanas. We have some Favaconas, which are a breed that we came up with here at My Pet Chicken. we have some Olive Eggers, which are kind of like an Easter Egger mutt, but they actually lay a beautiful olive egg. And just about everything else you could think of. I've got the dark chocolate eggling, black copper Morans, and Partridge Pinnatisankas. And you name it, I have it.
Wow. Sounds like you're really into this. You know, is the whole family
really
in with you?
It's a good thing I'm into it because, I live, eat, sleep, and breathe it.
Is everybody in the family into the chickens, or is it basically just you and they put up with them and you?
No, that's been one of the most wonderful things is my husband has totally been along for the ride. And, in fact, you know, I came up with a business idea in 2004, but I didn't really think much of it. And it was my husband who said, I think this could really be a thing. This could really work. And he pushed for it. And I don't think if he hadn't pushed for it, you really wouldn't have gotten off the ground. But he believed in it and pushed for it. And, you know, when I first quit my job to start it, of course, he supported us. So we both had a corporate job at the time. So he's in support of it, and now we've got some kids, and they love their chickens. You know, they're frequently seen around the backyard carrying one under each arm. And, you know, they love to educate their friends about chickens. So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, Joe raises chickens for eggs and for meat. Are yours mainly, now your site is mypetchicken.com. Are you mostly raising them for their eggs?
Yes, I am. You know, I'm a vegetarian, so I keep them for the eggs and for the pets. That said, I think it's wonderful if people are going to eat meat to raise it on their own, and where you can really monitor their conditions and make sure they live a humane lifestyle.
Exactly.
And I do love to see that, but we really advocate keeping them for pets. You know, I have my girl who's almost 10 years old here, my old hen, and you know, we keep them around, and we encourage our customers to do the same, but we certainly don't look down on people who process them either.
Now, you should absolutely nominate your 10-year-old hen for Pet of the Day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I hereby nominate her.
Yeah.
Because I know you have at least one really good picture of her. If she's been around for 10 years, I'm guessing she's in more than one.
For sure, yeah. She survived some battles, so she's a... Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to feature her.
And what kind is she?
She's an Easter egger. In fact, she was my least favorite bird. When I first got her, I thought, oh, she's kind of boring. But I just love her now. I hope I have another 10 good years with her.
Yeah, she's not laying anymore, I bet, though, is she?
No. We're not sure. She definitely laid until she was 7, and occasionally we see her in the nest box, but now we have so many different hens. In order to be sure she was still laying, we'd have to isolate her.
Right.
With, like, maybe a white egg layer and a brown egg layer so that she wasn't all alone. And you know, we haven't done that, but we should, because people ask that question all the time. You know, they're really interested in how long chickens live and how long they lay eggs for and what they're going to do in those interim years. So we should, because some of the heritage breeds are said to lay for many more years than a commercial production breed.
And there's a lot of information online where people spread rumors that, you know, the chickens will only lay eggs for 3 years or 4 years, and that's just not correct.
Thank you very much. It is just not correct. Yeah. You know, and you have to keep them that long to know for sure. Of course, their production slows down. And if you're looking at it from a purely cost perspective, keeping that older flock around, you know, you probably won't make your money back if you're selling your eggs. But interestingly, you know, I ran my numbers this year, and I figured I spend about $1,200 a year on the birds. And if I sell my free-range, organically fed birds' eggs at $5 a dozen, I'm covering my cost. I'm getting to eat, you know, save a certain number of dozen for myself to eat, and my costs are fully covered. So, and I do keep around the birds that don't lay anymore. So, I, you know, where I live, people have no problem paying $5 a dozen for these, you know.
Well, Tracy, I'm going to cut you off right now. We are out of time for this segment. Joe always hates when I say this, but we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show, talking with Tracy from MyPetChicken.com. Country Joe's Chicken Show. We are speaking with Tracy Torres of MyPetChicken.com. Now, Joe, did you start with chickens as a child, or did you get into it as an adult as well?
Well, it's funny. It skipped a generation. My grandfather had chickens, and I grew up without chickens, but he had chickens. And so basically after, you know, he passed away, there was no more chickens. And then when I moved out to the country, that just came back to me. That was the first thing I wanted. So I said, yeah, I'm going to get some chickens, and not knowing anything about them. And so I did. And that's how I basically started. But, I mean, it was from, you know, I remember my grandfather had them. And I was really young, really, really young, probably 4 or 5. And they fascinated me, and I was just scared of them and, you know, the whole thing. And so that's how I did it. And, boy, I'll tell you, I've had
and
them.
So you didn't even get to hatch them in school like Tracy did.
No, not a bit, not a bit. No, and my grandfather used to raise them to sell, you know, and that's how he did it. And, of course, when, you know, when it come head chopping time, of course, he had a big family, 12 kids, you know, they ate them. You know, I couldn't be around. So that's how that went. But I was always fascinated by them. And, the funny thing is I always grew up, thought there was only one kind of chicken, a brown chicken. That was it, you know.
and now what you don't know, Tracy, is Joe loves the rare chickens. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
There's no chicken too rare for Joe to want it.
And
what
Joe
breed
has.
Do you have?
Huh?
What breed do you have?
Well, I have my production chickens are the Red Comets, you know, and the Rhode Island Reds. And then I have the Cornish Cross for my meat chickens. And I also have about 100 and something turkeys, meat turkeys, the white broad-breasted. And then over in my fun coop, I call it my fun coop, that's where I have the Golden Campines and the white-faced Black Spanish and those types of chickens, you know. Those are my
nice.
Yeah. And I now I'm on the hunt here for, in the chicken world, red caps. That, you know, they're on the critical list, so I'm after red caps. And I want a Malay rooster because they're 3 feet tall. I want one of them. And now I also found a new thing. I wanted to get an oscillated turkey. Because everybody tells me you can't get one because they're $1,500 and they're rare. So now I want one.
The more rare, the more you want it, right?
Yeah.
We photographed a Malay. My husband's a photographer. We go around to the poultry shows and set up a little portable photo studio and take pictures. And you can see a lot of those on our website. We photographed the Malays, Shamlows, and the Seals, which are all kind of related. And they're so calm. I mean, they look like dinosaurs. They look kind of scary. But they're really friendly, and I have to tell you, I have never, ever seen a woman bring one of those birds to a show to photograph. That is such a typical man bird.
It is. Maybe that's why I want
kind
it. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about, Joe, you saying you want a Malay rooster, is when I went on Tracy's website, one of the things I saw was the collar for roosters that you guys have on your website. And it doesn't keep, it's not like a shock collar, but it muffles the sound of the rooster crowing.
Wow.
Well, basically it's the best thing for people who live in sort of, you know, not quite the country like me. It prevents the rooster from releasing the contents of his air sac all at once. So that essentially makes the crow quieter. And I think it frustrates them a little bit not to be able to crow as loudly, so they do it less frequently. So not only are the decibels reduced, but the frequency is reduced.
Wow.
To the point where they make about as much noise as a hen. And they're able to vocalize, they're able to eat, they're able to drink, they're able to mate. Good Lord, my rooster is amorous. But they just can't crow. So it's really a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's a patent-pending collar, and we're so excited to offer it. And, you know, it's brand new on the market, and we've got our rooster wearing it. And, you know, we ordered a hen. We got a rooster. You know, it happens about one out of every 100 times, and this allowed us to keep our rooster. Otherwise, he would have had to, you know, be sold, and hopefully he would have gone to a good home, but you just... Really, you know, you never know.
Yeah. So now, how could somebody get a hold of one of these collars if they, you know, they use this and they want one?
Right now,
you know,
we're the only place to sell it. Uh-huh. You have to go to myfatchicken.com. It's not for sale anywhere else as of yet because it's just so new to the market.
Now, how much are they?
It's $17, including shipping, which, in fact, that's an introductory price. The price will go up soon. We don't have a particular date, but we expect the price to go up to $20 or $22 a piece.
Now, how exactly does it fit on the bird, you know, so they don't take it off or whatever? How does that
work? Yeah, that's a good point. It comes with instructions, but basically it's three strips of Velcro, and there's mesh between the strips. Mm-hmm. And you fit it on, you know, pretty tightly. I would say, you know, if you really stick your pinky finger up there, or like a woman's pinky finger up there, it should kind of just barely fit. So it should be pretty snug.
Yeah.
And what you do is you put it on this, you know, pretty tight, and then you watch very carefully to make sure there are no signs of distress and that your rooster can breathe and eat and drink and loosen it if necessary. And if the crows are still too loud, you can tighten it up a bit. So it requires monitoring at first, and once it's on, it's amazing.
Yeah, who thought of this?
There's a woman named Lauren Taylor, who's a backyard chicken keeper and, you know, had the same problem I did and wanted to keep her pet roosters. But she's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in an urban environment. So she made it happen. She patented it, and all the power to her. We're so excited.
Yeah. I never heard of such a thing. I would have never thought of such a thing. Never mind heard.
You know. I know.
Yeah, and what people listening to the show aren't familiar, roosters do not believe the cartoons you saw on Saturday morning as a child. Roosters do not just crow at the break of dawn and that's it. Roosters crow as often as they feel like it, and some of them, that's, you know, every hour, every half hour, sometimes it's a whole bunch of times in the afternoon, or,
Karen,
you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Karen, I've got seven roosters out there, and it's a constant barrage of, I mean, we're talking seconds in between crows. You know, if one shuts up, the other one gets the other six going, you know, so it's just a constant, and each one is with hens, so they like to show off. And so roosters crow from, you know, like you say, on a full moon, they'll crow at night. You know, that's how bad it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so having a collar for them, maybe, Joe, maybe you want to try that with some of yours just for your own sanity. But, of course, people who have pet chickens in the city, that's how you get sort of found out if your city doesn't allow them.
Yes. God, that's
exactly.
Interesting.
I think it'll be a game changer.
It will.
Yeah. People
absolutely.
Start ordering roosters too.
and I think that people don't realize that, you know, someone can have chickens without a rooster and nobody gets any noise complaints. But the minute you get a rooster in there, you know, the neighbors are all up in arms and and if you can't bribe them with eggs, then then you're in trouble. You know, we are running out of time for this segment. Tracy, will you stick with us for one more?
I'd love to.
Excellent.
Okay, good.
and I don't know how Joe's going to fit collars on seven roosters all at once, but that would be quite a sight to see. Folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. Back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. We are talking with Tracy Torres from mypetchicken.com. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you have your website is good for guiding people who are just starting out?
Yeah, you know, that was our aim when we created the website, to hold the hands of people who are brand new to it and, you know, give them a sense of what it really takes to care for chickens and help them decide whether chickens are the right pet for them. You know, one of the things that shocked us when we first started researching chickens for ourselves was that you can go into these hatchery websites and order baby chicks, and they'll just send them to you with no assurances that you know what you're doing or that you're equipped or prepared to care for them. So we wanted to create that resource for people. The website has a little breed selector tool where you can answer 6 questions about what you're looking for in a chicken, and it will output a list of recommended breeds. We have a free chicken care guide that will, you know, it's about a 30-minute read. It gives you an overview of, okay, how much time do I need to care for chickens? How much space do they need? What, you know, what does a coop look like? What do I, you know, how do I care for baby chicks? How do I care for them when they get older? And then we have just a ton of maybe like 400 chicken care help topics in a searchable database. So, you know, you think you might, your birds aren't laying and you're not sure why, you can go to our website and search that. So there's a lot of free information in addition to, of course, all the baby chick breeds you could ever want. We sell hatching eggs. We sell incubators. We sell coops galore. We sell, you know, books.
Wow.
We wrote our own book on chicken care. So we sell all of that as well.
Boy, that's
and
pretty
I know,
intense.
So you've had people in the past who call you up and say, I got a bunch of chicks and they all died. What did I do? And people tell you all sorts of things.
Oh, my God. Well, the one that I remember the most is where they bought 2 dozen of them. They put them on the back porch in a beer box and put a screen over it. And the next day, they were all dead. You know, she says they had food and water. I don't know what the problem was.
They were heated, right? I mean, yeah, we get that, too. So we make people, when they are checking out of our, you know, if they've got baby chicks in their shopping cart, we make people check a box that says, I understand baby chicks require special heat, special care, you know, and then 4 times after they buy the baby chicks, we send them emails saying, okay, your chicks are going to arrive soon. Are you prepared? Do you have the, you know, a way to heat them? Do you have a safe environment? Do you have your pine shaving bedding? And so we really go to great lengths to make sure people understand what they're getting into and they're prepared, because we just hate getting those phone calls and those emails.
Yeah, because normally with chickens, most of the time people tell you, the hatcheries, that you've got a 10% loss anyway from shipping to the time you get them, you know, after 2 or 3 days. And I found that to be true. So there is a natural, you know, mortality in there, I guess. But
There is. Yeah, it's less for us. We keep pretty good track, and we have our numbers down much lower than that. You know, we've done a lot of A/B testing to figure out what are the ideal conditions to get those numbers down. And we also ship our birds express mail, and other hatcheries ship priority mail. So we can get our birds there faster.
Boy, I guess so. So how many different breeds do you sell?
I don't have the exact number. We're probably around 60 breeds and varieties.
Wow.
In fact, we're just adding a new one this week. It's another cross that, you know, it's kind of like a designer cross, like a labradoodle of the chicken world. It's a salmon savarole cross with a Wheaton Americana. So you have a bird with beautiful big tusks and a beard and lightly feathered feet, and they lay a mint green egg, and they're just lovely. So we'll be selling those soon. So we're, you know, we add breeds all the time, and we listen to what our customers want. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any Malays?
No Malays. Birds like that don't sell well. I just had someone reach out to me today asking about Old English Game Bantams and large fowl as well. And they, you know, we sold them for a while, but they just didn't sell super well. You know, Ideal Hatchery has a good selection of some of those, you know, really hard to get birds. I bet you got your white face black Spanish from Ideal.
No, I'm trying to think back now where I did get it. It wasn't from Ideal. It was either Meyer or McMurray. I think it was McMurray Hatcheries where I got mine.
Oh, okay. They carry that as well. some of the other hatcheries will carry those, you know, certain super rare breeds. But we, you know, we just don't want to get into breeding anything that people, you know, people aren't buying. And Old English Game fall into that category.
Right.
Malay Shamels, the Teal, same thing, because they look so scary. And my customers in particular want the fluffy, docile pet chickens that lay beautiful, vibrant eggs. And that's really all they're looking for.
Like Silkies. Silkies are were the big rage for a while.
Yes, you know. They still are. They're still a top seller. And we actually sell... I'm sorry. We actually sell of sex phantoms. We're really one of the only places in the country you can get female and male bantams, or you know, you can order a straight run as well, but most places won't offer them sex.
Now, how about Saramas? You know, the little tiny chickens. Do you sell those? Those seem to be popular too.
We don't. We would sell happy eggs, but you know, Sarama eggs sell only take 17 to 18 days to incubate. So we would have to set those eggs on a different schedule from all the other birds. And then, of course, they're so tiny, we're afraid they would get crushed in the shipping process. So if we did Saramas, we'd have to have, like, separate incubators and, you know, sell them in batches of 25 and only ship Saramas with Saramas.
Yeah. I mean, they are small.
And you know, our next guest we're going to have on is Craig Russell from the SPPA. Have you dealt with the Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities at all, Tracy?
Not so much. I haven't had so many dealings with them, but I think they're doing great work.
Oh, yeah. I belong to that, and Craig Russell's the president of it, and he can hook you up with all the rare and unusual chickens you want.
Well, we might have to try and see if there are any new breeds we need to carry. If anyone has ideas about what we should carry, they should email info@mypetchicken.com, because we always pay attention to that.
His favorite is the Dorkings. He loves Dorkings, you know.
They're wonderful.
Yep.
One of the challenges with those is they have short legs, so they have kind of a hard time breeding those roosters with their little flat legs.
And you know, there's all these things that people don't think about. And Joe, you grew up thinking there was only one kind of chicken, and now look at you now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Tracy, you know, I've got out here in the yard now just under 1,000 birds. So, you know, I just went nuts with these things. The hobby that got away.
And it sounds like Tracy did too. Her hobby became a career.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and I tell people there's like the gateway animal into farming. So if you take that plunge and get chickens, you know, next you're getting goats and rabbits. So just be ready for it.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, Tracy, I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to give people your website one more time?
www.mypetchicken.com.
Okay.
And no spaces, no underlines, just mypetchicken.com. And you should definitely nominate that 10-year-old hen of yours for Pet of the Day.
I guess so.
Okay, we'll talk about that after. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And you know, we have people on Pet of the Day who have chickens that are therapy chickens. And so that's something you might want to think about sometimes with some of your friendlier hens, too. Because, of course, if they're pets that like other people, then they can even become therapy chickens, too. Folks, we are out of time for this segment, and here I am running on. We'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. We now have with us Craig Russell from the SPPA. That's the Society for Protection of Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. Did I get that right this time, Craig?
Finally.
Finally.
You were throwing protection in there, which we're in favor of protecting them, but you got the name right. You went to preservation.
We should have just called it the Rare Chicken Club. It would have been easier. So I, as I asked you earlier, what's new on your farm? You got any new breeds or anything?
Well, we just had some chicks hatch today. Not a whole lot going on. We've had, I don't have as many young stock, much young stock as I normally raise, but I've had some nice goslings and some good chickens, a few turkeys, waiting on some guineas and hopefully some peafowl.
Wow. God, yeah, I got turkeys.
And I have a Muscovy duck hatching.
There you go. Well, that's different.
Now, do you have a pond there so that you, your ducks
will
be happy?
Yeah, we have a large pond. The geese do very well on it. And I actually don't raise a lot of ducks anymore. At one time, I kept many, many breeds of ducks. But I do have Muscovies. The small ducks that I liked, the mallards and the calls and that sort of thing, were very vulnerable to hawks. Well, not so much hawks, but owls at night on the pond.
Wow.
So the geese, they can hold their own with most anything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So
we just had a woman on from MyPetChicken.com, and I was wondering if there are, besides Silkies, because we covered those, are there breeds of even the rare or the older breeds that make good pet chickens
good
more
pet
than others?
Chickens?
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of chickens that will make pretty good pets. I think a lot of people like the Bantams because they're small. But there's a chicken that I don't know if it will get into the standard with this name that's essentially a naked neck, silky cross. And they're calling them showgirls, even though many of them are roosters. And they're very tame. And good mothers like the Silkies. The Cochin Bantams are very tame. I would say the Brahmas are. And it depends a little on how they are hatched and handled when they're growing up. But a lot of chickens can be tamed. The big Brahmas will make pretty good pets. Dorkings seem to like people if they're raised carefully around people. There are just a lot of chickens that, if they're not spooked of people, will make good pets.
Uh-huh.
Now, are there breeds that you said, you know, the Dorkings and all tend to like people? Are there breeds that don't like people that you would say, you know, if you're going to get a pet chicken, stay away from?
It depends a little on how you say that. A lot of the newer breeds, the hens may be very pleasant. For instance, Orpingtons are often very calm and make good pets. The fact is that a lot of the modern breeds, and by modern breeds, I mean 20th century and late 19th century breeds, and since then, the breed development was all about production. And in prior times, people did not tolerate man-fighting chickens. but Reds and Rocks, they produce a lot of roosters that will grow up to be man-fighters, where Games and Orientals, Dorkings, Silkies, they don't do that. They were developed in a time when people lived very close to their livestock, and they didn't tolerate somebody that was going to flog the children or spur them in the leg. So there are breeds that are less friendly than others, but I think in most cases those are males, and often the females will be quite personable. I think when we're talking about that, we're mostly talking about chickens that are calm around people and those that aren't. But you have to take into consideration man fighters, which a lot of the old timers I knew growing up, they were appalled by the fact that we now tolerated chickens that would flog you. They didn't care for that. But in fact, it was because the emphasis turned strictly to production. And they were, in fact, very productive, and that's what they were looking for. They, if the strain laid a lot of eggs or grew fast or whatever, did whatever they wanted for production, they didn't worry too much about the personality. Leghorns and the other light breeds tend to be, now I've known some that were very good pets, but they tend to be flighty. Yet that's tolerated because they lay lots of eggs. The Minorcas, the Leghorns, the Anconas, they're egg machines. Now we have brown egg hybrids and some of the breeds that lay about as well, although in many cases the eggs cost a little more because the hen weighs a little more and takes a little more feed, although that wouldn't be the case with the Minorcas. They're a big chicken, lay a big egg, but it takes more food per egg than it does for a Leghorn or one of the modern commercial sex lynx or even a Rhode Island Red.
I was going to say, I've got 7 roosters out here, and I've had plenty of roosters, and I've never had a rooster that hasn't challenged me. Every one of them, they get up to about 6-8 months old a year.
And they're ready to fight with you.
Every one of them. I've never had one not. And as a matter
of
fact, I just got in a fight with one the other day.
One of the Orientals or a Game or a Dorking, very, very good chance you won't have that kind of a problem.
Well, that's why I want that nice Malay rooster. I want a 3-foot-tall Malay rooster. That's what I'm after.
A 3-foot-tall lap chicken, hey?
There are some that get close to that, but when you get one over 26 inches, it's a big one.
Yeah.
But they, in fact, are rarely man fighters. They're pleasant. And the reason is, if, you know, the kids are out in the yard with the chickens or the wife is feeding them, you really don't want them to get flogged or spurred. And so any of the chickens that did that, they ate.
Yeah.
Kind of like my old friend Bruce Lentz. If the chicken didn't perform the way he wanted it to, he might use a Dorking, for instance, that didn't go broody in his breeding pen for 1 year, but when he found out she didn't go broody, he invited her to Sunday dinner. And, of course, that's what they did for fighting roosters, although Bruce was telling me once that a rooster that would fight people, they usually didn't wait till Sunday dinner. They went to the pot right about then.
Went to that barnyard in the sky. Gentlemen, we are out of time for this segment. Will you hang on?
Sure, you will.
Of course.
We'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show.
And Craig.
Hello.
Yeah.
It's good to be back.
I was just thinking of your friend who's in the club there, Everett.
Yeah.
Now, he had or has Malays, doesn't he?
Yes, he has Malays.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, does and he have He can also put you in touch with Billy Sumner, who has some very tall birds. He has birds of a strain that have been selected for height rather than confirmation to the standard, although their color varies a little. They're basically good typey Malays, but they're very tall. I can give you that number, too, sometime.
Oh, good, good. I'll call you on that because I'm going to get me one. I'm going to get me a Malay. You watch this, Karen. I'm getting me a Malay rooster.
For Billy, you'll have to go to North Carolina. Chuck is in South Carolina.
Okay.
And there are a number of people in Florida that have them.
I hadn't found anybody, and I've been looking.
I think Ron Proffitt is in Florida, and the judge who was out in Oklahoma for a while, Danny Padgett, I believe they both have Malays.
Wow.
Well, you know, when we were talking about them in the last segment, I was thinking, you know, you said the Malays don't tend to be, you know, man fighters and tend to be rather calm chickens. And I suppose when you're a 3-foot-high rooster, you don't have to fight anything because you're bigger than most things that are going to try to get you.
Well, as I said, any Malay over 26 inches is very tall. but they do get taller than that, and certainly Billy has had some that are. And I think Ronnie Proffitt probably has some that are. But I can get you those contact information. I'm in touch with Billy fairly often. As I said, I'm pretty sure Danny, who has had good Malays in the past, still has some, and I believe Ronnie Proffitt does too. They have some very nice birds.
Now, are Malays, besides the people like Joe who just want a huge rooster in his yard, are they good layers, or are they
not particularly
for meat production?
They're not a bad meat bird, although they get tough pretty fast. They're long, tall. Their ancestry may go back to a fifth jungle fowl. Might actually go back to Madagascar, because we know that there was a long, tall, some people think it was flightless, others think that it could fly but probably preferred to run. Jungle fowl that's now extinct, but on Madagascar. That might be the fifth jungle fowl, because Malays have sort of beetle brows, a brow that overhangs the eye, which would be good for sunny areas. And although American biologists have often poo-pooed the idea that there was a fifth jungle fowl that had genetics in the domestic chicken, a lot of Europeans and Asians, including academics, firmly believe that that's the case.
And it would make sense if the fifth one was from Madagascar, because it's so separate that a lot of the species became specialized in bigger.
Traits, the long legs and the running and the eyes that are shielded from the sun are sort of typical of a bird from a grassland or island environment. We now know that there was such a bird on Madagascar, and it might well be the source of those particular traits that you find in a lot of the Orientals.
Well, that would be interesting to see. And if they, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a gentleman on who has the Book of Eggs, which is a giant book that I'm sure you would love. If you haven't seen it, Craig, you should look it up. But it's got eggs all from the Field Museum in Chicago. And we were talking a little bit about whether, you know, if there's an egg from that old Madagascar collection, if they had collected eggs back then, whether they could then get some DNA material from the shell and see what happened if they developed
now,
that.
Now, when you talk about a book of eggs and about eggs, was he talking about the elephant bird, which has been extinct for some thousands of years? It was kind of a huge ostrich, a member of the ostrich family.
Well, I don't know that there's one of those in the book. It's got over 700 eggs in it of different bird species. And, of course, it has the emu egg and the ostrich egg. I did not see the elephant egg. Maybe they don't have one of those at the Field Museum, which is where, you know, they have a huge, extensive collection.
There are some in existence, but I'm not sure where they're... I think the British Museum of Natural History may have one or more, but... I'm not sure where they're located.
And, of course, you know if they revive that breed, the first one who's going to line up to get one will be our buddy Joe here.
Yep. And got to have a big one. Got to have one. Yeah. So I'm getting geared up here. I'm going to get me a couple more emus. I miss those. I had those.
Oh, okay. You have emus now?
Well, I don't now, but I'm going to. I got to I just got to get a six-foot fence because the other ones, they were going over like nothing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they just jump right over that when they got excited. So, but I had more fun with those. So I'm going to get me at least another pair of those because those were I raised those up and they were just like babies. They'd be right around my door all the time waiting for me. And they walk around the yard with you. You know,
and they have such spectacular eggs. They look like dinosaur eggs.
Yeah, they're green, big green eggs. You know.
Yeah, they are impressive looking.
It's either the male or the female. I forgot which one now. Makes this drumming noise from his chest.
It's the male.
It's the male.
And he's also the one that hatches the eggs and takes care of the babies.
Yeah. But that drumming, it's like an echo drumming, and you can't really tell where it's coming
it's
from.
It's impressive.
You know? Yeah. So I missed that. So I said, well, I got to get some tall fence now. So I'm going to do that because there was emu farms down here in Florida, a lot of them, and now there's not. But I think
they probably found out, like you find out, that if your emu decides it wants to make a run for it, and you don't have a really tall fence, your emu is going to become your neighbor's emu is going to become the next county's emu if it feels like it.
Yep, that's it. And then the other thing, Craig, that I was going to just mention to you, I got on this other kick. I found a brand new turkey for me anyway that's really rare, oscillated turkey. Have you ever – I know
what
you have.
What turkey did you find?
Oscillated. I didn't find
it.
Oh,
okay, yes. I'm very familiar with those.
Are you?
Of course.
My God.
They're one of the wild turkeys.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Several subspecies of – the common wild turkey, then there's the second species, although the two can interbreed, from Central America.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are very nice.
Yeah, $1,500 a piece if you can find one.
Yeah. Yeah, they're expensive in this part of the world. And you're in a pretty good place to raise them, but they are delicate.
I heard that. Yeah.
Even though they do keep them or have kept them as domestic fowl in some of the Central American villages, but that's their climate and that's their place.
Yeah.
Right. They wouldn't be good for me up here in the Boston area at all.
They wouldn't do well in the Boston area unless you provided them with heated quarters in the winter.
Right, and I think that would be Joe's deal if he was going to come up here too. So maybe they ought to stick with them. Craig, we are running out of time for this week's show. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Now, if people want to contact you or the SPPA, how can they do that?
Well, I can be reached at 570-837-3157. I maybe should say that again, 570-837-3157. You can get information from me on the club, or actually the society, or you can talk to Dr. Charles Everett, who's our secretary, treasurer, and Dr. Everett's number is, I call him all the time, but I'm trying to remember, it's 803-960-2114.
Well, I want to thank you so much. You know, we are out of time for this week's show, but you can try to say it with us.
Have a great day.
I will. I'll be calling you later.
Okay.
Okay.
And Joe, will you say it with me?
Yep. Yep.
May the flock
be with you.
Be with you. We'll be back next time with more Country Joe's Chicken Show.